WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us. Sir, how are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome and good evening. You are indeed tuned into Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. Hopefully you have found a good way to spend the president's birthday February 19th, February 20th. I almost said 19th. I don't know why. I feel like I'm in 2022. But we have some great conversation that's going to be taking place tonight. I do my best every week when we're booking guests and finding folks to have thoughtful conversations, stuff that we're not just beating things. It's just a redundancy to some of the conversations, but at least having different voices, some of the great folks that we have in and around the South Shore and beyond. Later on this evening, hour number two, State Senator Mike Brady will join me, as will Nubi Ritteau, a local award-winning filmmaker, as he's got his film, I Am You, going to be showing up at the State House on Wednesday. Prior to our break for hour number two, he's already here right now. He's still kind of a little grumpy after the Daytona 500 last night. Ricky Stenhouse Jr. Coming away with it after a myriad of crashes the final couple of laps. He is the president and CEO of Joe Flood Insurance, also the master of the Massachusetts Coastal Coalition. He's actually the executive director. Joe Rossi's here. Joe, you can say hi.
Hello.
Joe, of course, is still currently at this moment, unless there's some kind of a vote to vote him off, part of the show opening, which we are currently revamping at this particular time. We'll do a big unveiling somewhere down the road. I don't know if big is a word, but we'll do another one because people have clamored and said, hey, the people who are on your intro are no longer in office. And, of course, the individual you're hearing laughing, he's my first guest right after traffic, but we might have him on for a couple of moments. I've always enjoyed having conversations with this gentleman, depending on whether he is somebody who is elected to the select board in Plymouth or maybe seeking office or wants to talk about different issues that are happening in and around his community that is Plymouth. We have Mr. John Mahoney joining us. Mr. Mahoney, how are you?
Very well, Kevin. It's always good to be here at WATD.
Now, I would say out of the gate, if there was a visual component to this, that you look fantastic. I didn't recognize you. Normally, you come in, you've got a suit and a tie.
I went casual tonight.
You're casual. I'm kind of casual as well. I'm going with the Daytona 500 look with one of my sponsors, nice. Tiny and Sons Glass, as he always gives me swag. And so the idea is to have different guests like John on to find out what's happening in America's hometown, knowing that not only does he serve on the select board, but he also is a valuable member on the Nuclear Decommissioning Citizens Advisory Panel, which all the ladies and gentlemen out there know called the NDCAP panel.
Absolutely, Kevin. I took that challenge on a year or two ago, but I currently, so it's a 21-member advisory board to the governor.
Okay.
And it's a state committee, and it has certain slots up and down with respect to the town of Plymouth gets a few appointees and then certain departments at the state level. But we meet every 2 months, Kevin, for 2 hours, but sometimes those meetings go from 2 to 3 hours. But
3 to 4 hours.
We're getting to the point now where we're talking about the decommissioning of the former Pilgrim Power Station, 70% of the outlying buildings, you know, as we get closer to the reactor, have been removed. They are moving along. Holtec, the current owner, is on pace to have it fully decommissioned probably around 2027. And right now the sensitive issue is the disposition of a million-plus gallons of water that is still on site.
Yeah, you've had your share of not only local officials like yourself, but also elected officials to, you know, in the legislature. Even our administration, whether it was Governor Baker to, I'm sure, or Governor Healey right now, who serving as Attorney General, said, okay, do not, you know, discharge that water, that contaminated water, into Plymouth Bay. So it's, you know, we need to know what's going on with it. So I'm looking forward to a valuable conversation with you as to what your concerns are, what the panel's concerns are.
Well, the arrival of a state delegation to the site to take samples has been delayed for a few months here, but I think I have confidence in the next 30 to 40 days that they're going to show up. It's led by an individual from the Department of Public Health, and I know that Holtec recently has agreed to allow a Plymouth department head in, only as an observer, but they're going to sample water from three locations in the building,
yep,
and then that'll be sent out to various labs.
So we'll talk more about that in just a few moments. And besides contaminated water, we'll talk water in general. Kind of interesting. So we'll do that with John, and actually it'll extend to Joe.
If this thing called civilization was going to end, I think it would have ceased during one of the two world wars. My grandparents never gave up. They worked and lived till the bitter end, which wasn't bitter at all. Actually, it was sweet. Their life was sweet. I want my life the same. I want to work, coach my kids' soccer team, go out to eat after, and then come home to my bed where I can rest my bones. Then get up and do it all again tomorrow. That's what I want, that's what I'm working for, and that is my American dream. I can't do it alone. I need you. We need each other. We're all in this together, and together we can have our American dreams. As long as we're willing to do what is necessary to survive on this marble called Earth. Brennan's Smoke Shop, the best smoke shop in Massachusetts and now New Hampshire. Brennan's Smoke Shop, customers must be 21 years of age or older, and proper ID is required.
Monday Night Talk continues all week long. Go to 95.9WATD.com/Monday Night Talk and keep in touch on Facebook and Twitter. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Happy President's Day to one and all. Again, we teased a little bit, gave a little bit of a tease with John Mahoney, a member of the Plymouth Select Board, also someone who sits on the NDCAP Commission, the panel. And we actually kind of started talking a little bit about that. This is what's Holtec has kind of got the property to a certain point, but I think the one main concern is what are they going to do? At least that's the prime thing right now. I'm sure there are going to be other conversations in regards to the property itself, but it's the water.
Absolutely. The most pressing issue right now, Kevin, is the water. And I certainly, this has been delayed enough, but I certainly hope by the end of March that that state delegation will get down into the building. They'll take their samples. Again, it looks like we've had the green light for a department head from the town of Plymouth to join them and be an observer. And then from there, it's going to go out and be tested. So the question is, and there's dozens of potential foreign, I don't want to say contaminants, but entities in this water.
Right.
So is it going to surpass the threshold that the Department of Public Health in Massachusetts has deemed to be, you know, unsafe? Or is it not? So if it doesn't, and then what is the state and what is Mara Healey going to tell Holtec that they can do? So then that potentially would lead to another discussion where there might be a negotiation where, you know, state or federal officials will come in and say, you know what, even though it doesn't exceed thresholds, we would prefer that you don't discharge it into the bay. And let's work on, you know, a potential couple of other options, which means, one of them would be, let's truck it somewhere else and make it somebody, unfortunately, make it somebody else's problem. But that would come with a dollar sign attached to it.
So you talk about federal officials, elected federal officials. Have we not seen Senator Markey or Warren speak out and say anything at this point? I thought Markey might have said
something. Senator Markey had his committee, and I forget the name of the committee that oversees this. They actually had a committee meeting in the 1820 courthouse down in Plymouth, and that was probably, I'm guessing, fall of last year. So he had that committee meeting literally in the town of Plymouth. And Dr. Singh, who was the owner of Holtec, zoomed in. He participated in that meeting remotely. So obviously, a lot of what said was that day was, let's follow the science and let's not allow our emotions to, take control here. So we're waiting. The next step, Kevin, is they got to get in there. They're going to take the samples, send them off to the lab, get those results, and then from there, there's a potential multiple different conversations.
See, I live in Duxbury, so I worry about where this is going to go. But knowing that Holtec was the leading bidder to be able to come in and take care of this, knowing that they can make money, there's money to be made from this, that they're going to look for, capitalism. The most inexpensive way to take care of this so that the almighty buck can be earned.
Yeah, so the prior owner, Entergy, was, they couldn't get out of town quick enough. And Holtec, with respect to capitalism, so there are these pot of golds all over predominantly eastern United States. And what I'm talking about is the decommissioning fund, Kevin. The rate payers pay into that. And the fund initially was in the $1.1 to $1.2 billion range. And Holtec came in and said to Entergy, we don't have a problem using that level of money to properly decommission this site. And as soon as they're done decommissioning, whatever's left in that fund, they leave town with.
Serious, yeah.
The differential, they put in their pocket and they leave town with. So, yeah, and they're looking to build on this. They own multiple other plants, and they're just going to go around and scoop up as many as they can.
And this is not to be disrespectful to anybody who might work for Holtec, who might have a stake in that organization. Sure. But the thought here is that sometimes if there's a buck to be made, sometimes we'll find a quick way around to be able to take care of a particular situation. A probably perfect scenario is when we've seen schools built, a general contractor come in, build schools, and then years later, you find out a number of things that the general contractor did not properly do, and when you go to seek out that group or the general contractor, they no longer exist. I've seen it happen too many times as a reporter.
Kevin, the textbook example of, if you're saying this because I'm from Plymouth, the textbook example probably in this area is Plymouth South High School, the one that was built in that 87-89 range. It lasted 28 years. It was leveled and built new. We christened a new South High School in September of 17, and that building was deemed a disaster from day one. And if you look at the postmortem, probably around 2014, 2015, an outside consulting firm came in and they did a biopsy. And if you go back to the mid to late 80s, there was no state oversight. They would just cut these communities' checks and trust them to execute these projects properly. Right. They're incapable of doing that. So if you look at the South High School project from the mid to late 80s, the design was 25 years old before they put a shovel in the ground. They hired a contractor that wasn't qualified to build a doghouse, and then they said, do it on the cheap.
Right.
And that's what happens.
It's interesting, the situation. And again, this is not to be down on anybody, but these are situations that we see all over the place, and that a lot of times, who is left with the ultimate bill? The taxpayer.
Exactly. So in this case, I use the analogy of the time machine. And I get teased by one of my colleagues on the board for referencing this. But the point I'm trying to make, Kevin, is you don't have the ability to go back in time. So you've got to learn from the mistakes of the past and put processes in place that prevent them from happening again.
Right.
And the state did that. The model school program is phenomenal. They don't trust any community in the Commonwealth to be left alone in a room with the U.S. dollar. They make a conservative assumption that they are all incompetent, and they insist on quality of construction coming out of the ground. Mm. And then you have to sign on to a maintenance program. That's how all infrastructure should be handled.
As an official in, as an elected official in Plymouth, knowing that there probably are other capital needs, how hesitant are you to want to support, whether it's to build a new public safety building, whether it's to build a new school, replace a school? How cautious are you?
Well, we, so first of all, I don't care what form of government you have, and I'll restrict this to the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, sure, all 350 towns. Everything they do financially is in a 365-day process. There is no 5, 10, 30-year plan, even though in our private lives, in our private businesses, we can think 20, 30, 40 years out. Okay, you take out a 30-year mortgage, you're a fiscal conservative. But it's all about surviving from year to year. The town of Plymouth right now, we have 8 elementary schools. And the oldest one was built in 1910. Oh. And the youngest two were built in 1977. So if you look over a 30 to 40 year period, when you talk about modernization and new construction, okay, you're looking at $500 million to $1 billion sitting there of needs that those buildings need. And we're on the verge. The school committee has a consultant hired now, and there's supposed to be a report coming out potentially any day or week now, putting together a strategy of how to go about or what we should do specifically in North Plymouth with 1 to 3 elementary schools over there. So, I mean, whatever they come up with, that's $100 to $200 million there. But the good news is, Kevin, is that back in 2014, the town of Plymouth passed the meals tax option, okay? And the state legislature, what they do is they trust the communities with taxes, and they shouldn't do that, okay, because they're incapable of handling them responsibly. But what we did with the meals tax option was we passed a home rule petition preventing it from going into the general fund. And what we did, Kevin, was we built a brand new $50 million town hall, and we did it without raising property taxes. And we said, we insisted on new construction, replicating the process of the model school program. And I just want to let you know that the revenue we get from that meals tax option is now surpassing the annual debt service for the mortgage on the new town hall. So we're going to, we're hearing an article tomorrow night to tweak the language in that home rule petition in order where we could use the surplus money, potentially 5 to 10 years down the road, to invest in public safety, education, or a DPW annex, in doing it without raising property taxes. So putting the money ahead of the capital need and knowing where the money is coming from, instead of just getting to that point and having an argument over saying, well, we have to raise property taxes $200 million when you don't have to do that.
So instead of doing like a CPC or CPA type of a fund where it comes out of real estate taxes, right?
Right.
The percentage goes in. You're taking a meals tax, and that's something you're kind of, you're banking and putting it towards,
right,
not only paying off the new town hall, but you can put it for other property, for other capital needs.
You got it. And we're in the language is public safety, education, and DPW. And what you're doing is you understand that you're going to need these things in the future.
Right.
And all these communities, irrespective of the form of government, they show up at that point in time and they say, oh, we need this. And all you're doing is just raising property taxes. And the other thing you're doing with respect to that meals tax is by having in its own separate interest-bearing account, you're making more money on top of the money. If that meals tax had ended up in the general fund, all it is it's a perpetual state of one-time revenue. Right. It's not making any more money.
Now, how is it? How is your budget normally divvied up? How much goes towards your education, your school budget, compared to what the municipality sees? Is it a 70-30, a 60-40?
I'd say it's more 60-40. It's more 60-40. If you look at the overall budget, Kevin, I mean, we're in that 70-80% range is the cost of your human resources, right, both town and school side. You're looking, you know, at your pension obligations, you know, your health care, and their pay.
Okay, we're speaking with John Mahoney. He is a member of the Plymouth Select Board. Again, part of the conversations that we're trying to have here on Monday Night Talk with different elected officials, not only in the state legislature or one of the somebody who is a town administrator, town manager, but individuals who sit on committees, at school committees, select board, just to name a few, to kind of get an idea of the pulse of what's going on in the communities in our listening area and beyond, if possible. Let's talk a little bit about economic development and maybe any concerns. I mean, how are things when it comes to economic development in Plymouth? And in respect, I think the one key ingredient to economic development is water.
That is the, Kevin, that's the signature issue for any community. And, you know, obviously we touched on the million gallons from the plant earlier, but the umbrella issue is water. If you want public health, public safety, and sustainable economic development, you need security in your water system. Mm. And the town of Plymouth doesn't have that. We're down two wells right now. I've always had an issue. If you look at the Commonwealth, I would say there's at least, you know, you've heard in the last 5 to 10 years people talk about wealth disparity. There is water wealth disparity in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. So around 1935, the Quabbin Reservoir was created. Okay, everybody within 128 into the city doesn't have to worry about water. Boston can put up a 70-story building tomorrow. Where's your water coming from? It's the Quabbin. If it stops raining tomorrow, they have 6 years of a supply out there at the Quabbin. That's proactive investment in the water. And then obviously if you get down to Brockton, the city of Brockton, for, I don't know, 50 to 70 years, they've had complete control.
It's a century.
Yep, over Silver Lake.
Yep.
Okay, a century over Silver Lake. And, you know, you have those surrounding communities over there, Pembroke, Halifax, Plimpton, and Kingston, that, you know, nobody's allowed to enjoy. You can walk down and look at the water. You just can't touch it. You can't swim there legally. You can't fish.
Yep. Recreation.
Okay.
Yep.
So they have, and I believe they take about 12 million gallons a day. Okay. But then you look at the town of Plymouth, and the majority of the other towns in Plymouth County. You've got to find out where the water is. Mm. You've got to secure that land. Then you have to put infrastructure into the ground that takes that water out and then puts it into your system to distribute it. And then I would say that there's another fourth level, and that's down in the Cape communities. Okay, they don't sit over a freshwater aquifer. Right. They sit over the ocean. That's a giant sandbar. So obviously they have issues down there. You know, if you put a pipe in the ground or a well, you know, to extract the water too far, you have issues with saltwater intrusion. Right. And obviously Plymouth does too, as you move towards the coast. When you go inland, you don't. But so it's things like that, Kevin. There's four different levels of water wealth right there that I just mentioned. And, you know, I keep, you know, when you talk about 40B, you have that's almost a 55-year-old state mandate, okay, that affordable, quote-unquote, housing that doesn't take into account water. And it's a one-size-fits-all around the Commonwealth, and it doesn't work. And it's unfortunate, but the town of Plymouth and plenty of other communities suffer because of that legislation.
We look at the little bit of snowfall that we've seen this year. I don't know if rainwater or the rain that we've received has been enough. Usually the winter months, we worry about how much snow we get and as far as the snowpack, and we look to the spring. Any concerns as to drought and how that could play a role in your community?
Oh, right. I did a site visit in the summer of 2017 with a former colleague of mine on the select board, DPW director, and the water superintendent. And in the 2016, the summer of 16, the Manomet well went down to nothing a couple of times. And what happened was the other wells in the area were very low. So sometimes what they do is when one well is low, they'll take surplus water from the other wells and they'll
pump it.
Right. They'll balance the system. They didn't have the ability to do that. So we were standing there on a 200-acre site, which potentially could have been a new well site, almost 6 years ago, and I looked at the two town employees. I said, what did you do? And this is a direct quote. We crossed our fingers and hoped that the public didn't figure it out. That's going to happen again.
You think that'll happen?
That is going to happen again. We got lucky in 2016, and That is inevitably another drought scenario is going to happen. So a few years ago, we brought online a new well over at Forges Field, 1 million gallons a day. That water at Forges Field is diverted to North Plymouth. And then from North Plymouth, it is diverted to West Plymouth.
Wow.
We're just pushing it. It's basically a shell game. And right now, we're down two wells. And if you ask the town employees where we're going to put them, they throw their hands up in because it just can't be any piece of land. You know, it has to be strategically located where you have the ability to put in the infrastructure. And we're struggling right now, and especially with some out-of-control development, some of which is the community's fault, and some of it which is not. And, you know, we've got a couple of 40Bs, you know, 350 units apiece, 700 units, and we are struggling to provide them with water.
Well, we're just about out of time. I want to thank you, John, for coming in. Anything in closing, whether it's handicap-related, water-related, or maybe even select board related that you want to touch on for a half a second, maybe to give a preview of your upcoming meeting?
Well, I lost my mother a few years ago. Today was her birthday, so I miss my mother. And then today is President's Day. And with respect to the Ukraine-Russian thing, it's unfortunate that he didn't make it to the end of his first term, but I'd have to put JFK up there. Especially the analytical, objective way he handled the Cuban Missile Crisis. And I know that Putin has said recently that that was capitulation on behalf of, I think, Khrushchev's part. But he solved that problem like a professional. It's too bad he didn't get two terms. But I put him up there in the top five.
See, you say he might be one amongst all the presidents that we've had serving our country.
Yeah, he was up there. How he definitely handled that... that situation there in 62, obviously, Kevin, before my time, but I read a lot about it.
Yeah. Same here. We're grabbing oil. We're in the same boat. But, well, thank you for coming in, and let's have you back on in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, Kevin, there's an ungodly amount of stuff going on in the town of Plymouth. If I come back, you're going to give me 3 hours, okay?
I can give you more than just the 20 minutes. How's that?
Okay,
all right, there he is.
Thank
John
you.
Mahoney, our guest, coming in studio to talk about all that's going on in the great town of Plymouth. We're going to step aside. Our conversation on water does not end here. We talk flood scenarios. Then we talk Joe Flood with Joe Rossi in just a moment here on 95.9 WATD. You're tuned in to Monday Night Talk.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Are you worried about your drinking?
Or is someone else worried about your drinking?
Alcoholics Anonymous has a solution.
There is no shame in living with a disease called alcoholism.
Regardless of your age, employment, or any other circumstances in your life, you deserve help from other individuals who understand what you are going through. Alcoholics Anonymous is here for you 24/7 at AA.org. Find online meetings at AABoston.org.
By the middle of the week, so much news has come your way, you need your own team to sort it out. Lucky for you, there's Jared Valenzuela and the JV team to talk about the things you've heard and catch you up on some things you might not know.
I'm Jared Valenzuela. Join me and my guests as we have fun with current events and try to put things into perspective each week. Sponsored by Corey Welch of Boom Realty. Catch the JV team every Wednesday night at 6:15 here on 95.9 WATD.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
All right, we are back. You caught me. I was in the middle of talking Daytona 500 with Joe Rossi. I am no NASCAR aficionado like he or our very own Tim McKenney, who loves NASCAR, or Miles Heger, who has his own show here on Tuesday nights as Miles talks everything NASCAR. So if you have a chance, I believe he's on tomorrow night. Tune in to Miles, giving another show a plug here. But I was just telling Joe how surprised I was. And the victor, after 212 laps, you know, and a myriad of crashes towards the end, you know, if it was 1998, once they waved that flag, that would be it.
Yes.
You know, they would keep continuing it and extending it by a couple of laps. But Joe isn't here to talk NASCAR. Joe is here, as we have him here on a regular basis, just to give us an update as to what is going on when it comes to, if you're a homeowner, you know, you're going to be concerned about what's going on when it comes to insurance for your home, whether it's fire protection, whether it's, you know, whether it's flood. And Joe is one of those individuals since early on, I want to say 10, 12, 15 years ago, having conversations with Joe. I remember there was a March we had multiple rainstorms and people were worried about damage to their homes and having flooding because of those rainstorms. That was one of the early conversations I had Joe, because Joe was one of the guys who understood, was, he knew about the FEMA flood maps. He was one of the early, one of the individuals who was in, who was asking questions. He was part of a lot of the roundtables. And we have him back in on a regular basis to talk with him about what's going on, whether it's, you know, getting flood insurance, whether it's the National Flood Insurance Program, what has changed. Are they kicking it down the can? Are they extending it? Are their rates going up? Are there changes? Joe's the guy who knows. And instead of working for somebody, he now has, he's the president of Joe Flood Insurance. And when it comes to coastal situations, not just here in Massachusetts, of course, he is the executive director of the Massachusetts Coastal Coalition, formerly, I think, the Marshfield Coastal Coalition. Yes. And Joe, I know it's kind of a long-winded intro. How are you?
I'm good, Kevin. How are you?
I'm pretty good. So, what is the latest as far as with Joe Flood Insurance? How are things with your organization?
Oh, things are the best they've ever been. You know, it's obviously, we are, as a company, always growing and evolving. We've got some new programs coming online, and we're doing some really fun and innovative stuff. And, you know, that's the one thing that I've always liked about flood insurance specifically, is that as the issues change, and they do change. I mean, the, you know, you've just seen in the last year, you went from Hurricane Ian. Earlier in the year, you had historic floods in Kentucky and Illinois and in California most recently. So the issues are always changing. You know, what are the things that were claimed in the flood? I was just down in Florida a week ago and had the chance to go to Fort Myers Beach, which of course was ground zero for Hurricane Ian. And the half hour I spent there as I was going through, that continued to evolve my perception of flood, even though you think you know or understand it, and then you see something totally different, and it continues to evolve and change the perspective you may have. So it's fun, and so we're doing new things and having a lot of fun with it.
Can you at least tease us with what some of the or one or two of the new innovative things that you're doing?
Well, yes, some of them are, you know, we have a program, our own flood insurance policy or our own flood program, and it's called Upstream, and we have a lot of fun with that. So
that's pretty ingenious.
Yeah. So it's, that is our own, it's backed by, Chubb European Group. We have, it's our own program. We underwrite it in-house, meaning that we build the rates, we build the policies, we do it all in-house. And we're adding on, we're learning and adding and changing that program all the time. And that's what makes it so much fun. One of the things we're doing right now is we're trying to see, and this is late breaking, because we just got the okay, and we're now trying to make sure it meets insurance regulation, which is, of course, every state is regulated differently. But we believe that we can possibly offer the CRS discount on our program, just like the NFIP offers it in their program. That's going to be fun to see if we can do that. We got the okay. We just have to make sure it works. So that's one of the new things that we're doing. We're also building a property manager's program that fits the needs of a property manager better than, say, the regular programs we have do. So just a few things in the hopper. You know, I'm traveling the country this year, speaking at conferences all over the place, like usual. We're having a lot of fun.
What are some of the things that you know, I know you probably go there to share information, But I'm sure that in the same instance, you are also coming away with information from from some of the various places you go to, the how they are dealing with coastal issues, how they are, how they're helping their ratepayers, and maybe innovative things like you speak of.
Yeah, and you know these conferences, like you said, it's a give and take. I'm there to present information, but I'm also taking a lot away. And right now, one of the things I'm learning a lot about is how the changing market is affecting property policies and flood policies, and how that is interchangeable. Because you know, you would think, well, standalone flood, you're purchasing your flood here, and then you're buying your property insurance over here. But they're actually so much closer related to each other, even if one isn't providing the same coverage as the other. I'll give you a great example. In the commercial world, there for years, property companies were just throwing a flood limit into their property program, and that is, as you can imagine, changing. They're no longer giving away that flood coverage. And so now we come in and say, okay, you know, here's how – I'll give you a great example. We're working on a location in Miami that had one of these property companies give $52 million in coverage for about $100,000. This year on the renewal, they're getting $25 million in coverage for $260,000. So the market is changing, the coverages are changing, and that's one of the big things we're learning right now is how that all interacts and works together.
Let's talk a little bit about the Coastal Coalition. Is there anything new in as far as that goes?
Yeah.
We haven't seen any of the normal storms in Knucklewood. I don't want to jinx anything here. We haven't seen any of the major storms that we do during the wintertime as of yet.
Yeah. Well, you know, over the last few years, we just had our first board meeting of the year a couple weeks ago. And one of the things that we just talked about was kind of what are we doing? What is our mission? You know, what have we been focused on? And I have been a really big advocate of the community rating system over the last few years. Starting in 2018, we've done a lot of work with that. And what CRS, Community Rating System, is it's a program within, and we've talked about it here before, Kevin, it's a program within the NFIP that gives communities discounts on their federal, their NFIP policies, on the citizens' the policies of the communities, the citizens, if the community does certain things. So like in Marshfield, where we do a full implementation, there are things such as purchasing open space and doing community outreaches and coordinating those different elements. And so CRS has been a big focus, and I was trying to remember the last time I was on the show. It's a couple months ago.
Yep.
And just about when
New year, I try to have you on, quarterly, if I anticipate there's going to be any changes.
So we have, as a coalition and as the town of Marshfield, has been recognized nationally for some best practices in CRS that we've done in the town. And I personally have been awarded in November with the National CRS Award by FEMA. It's one of the highest awards that FEMA gives, and it was awarded to me for my work on CRS. And it's a real honor for me, but it really is beyond an honor for me. It's an honor to everyone who's worked with me on the CRS and flood insurance issues. But the point I'm getting at is the coalition has really been focused on this issue of CRS, and we believe that the future of the coalition, in addition to being focused on storms and coastal issues, is helping communities with the implementation of CRS, because it's totally voluntary. Communities don't have to be part of it, but if they are part of it, it's always good to share information. It's not like it's top secret. Everybody shares good tips and tricks.
Yep.
We've learned things. We've shared things. So that's really probably our biggest focus for the foreseeable future.
So we're just about 2 months into a new administration here in the state of Massachusetts.
Yes.
How does a new administration play a role when it comes to you know, the state and policies and insurance and rates? Does it play a role at all?
Well, it can, because, you know, the federal program, flood insurance is the National Flood Insurance Program, which is a federal program. Really, states don't regulate that. But what states do is they regulate private flood insurance. Right. They regulate, and that can be a big deal. And right now, we have for several years been advocating for a reform of sorts to the way the state regulates private flood insurance. So we're hoping that this session, that the bill that we have introduced 2 or 3 years ago, it's going to be reintroduced. We're hoping that it gets pushed through. And the big push on that bill, basically at the end of the day, would be make it easier for homeowners to buy private flood insurance that would be accepted by their lenders, but would also help communities understand the private flood insurance that's being purchased in their community.
So was this when this bill you're talking about, how many filings have there been and how much progress has been made? I mean, has it been made beyond committee? Is it hoping that it gets, is there a hope that it will somehow make its way onto a bill and bundled in without being stripped down too heavily?
Well, yeah, we had hearings on it in the last session, and there were some people supporting it and opposing it, and the opposition really wasn't opposing the passing of it. They just wanted changes to the bill. And look, we modeled the bill after the Florida and South Carolina bills. There's a different model bill that's out there,
yep.
And we really don't care which one gets passed. They both essentially do the same thing. Our goal, though, is to have it in the next couple years pass, which will make flood insurance in Massachusetts easier to purchase. And really, it's something that I think two dozen states have done, and states around us have passed this bill. So it makes sense that Massachusetts do it as well.
If you're just tuning in, we are speaking with Joe Rossi, President CEO of Joe Flood Insurance, also Executive Director of the Massachusetts Coastal Coalition. We have Joe in on a regular basis. Just to bring us up to speed, are there any changes in knowing that, again, so many different things happen at the beginning of the year, you never know what's going to change. Are we sensing any kind of rate hikes in the near future, or is this something we won't know for a while?
Well, if you're talking about the FEMA program, when Risk Rating 2.0 was passed a few years ago, there were changes in those rates. Some have seen increases, decreases. Overall, though, those that might be seeing increases, the private flood insurance market offered by companies like Lloyd's of London, or in our case, like Chubb European Group, these companies are offering rates that will hopefully help ease the pain if your NFIP policy is going up a lot. In the private flood insurance world, so the answer is not really. It all depends on Risk Rating 2.0 is almost, April 1st will make it a fully implemented program. So most people have already seen their new rates with Risk Rating 2.0. With private flood, yes, increases are coming because we've had a terrible flooding season. I drove through, like I said, Fort Myers Beach and I've seen a lot of destruction from floods locally, nationally. But what I saw in Fort Myers Beach was something that I have never seen before. What struck me the most, Kevin, was the 17-story condo buildings with not a car in the parking lot. And that tells me that the flood damage was so bad they can't even get into the buildings to begin with.
Goodness.
And that is the story that stuck with me the most, is that you might be able to insure high rises and not be worried about the flood on the third, fourth, fifth floor, but you do have to be worried about that loss of use, of them not being able to get back in, which can create a big claim scenario. But the reason I mention all that is it highlights the issues around increases in private flood. Those types of losses, they are big losses, and they will definitely be causing increases in private flood premiums all across the country.
Folks want to find out more information beyond this conversation, which they'll be able to find online through our podcast site. How can they find out more information through your organization or through the Massachusetts Coastal Coalition?
You can find everything I'm involved in on the website joefloodrossi.com. And so you can go there and find out about Joe Flood Insurance, the MCC, the Mass Coastal Coalition, and some of the national boards I sit on. You go to joefloodrossi.com to find out more.
So in the spirit of President's Day, Is there a particular president that you would say is someone that you always thought highly of or was a favorite president, or someone that you felt that maybe had policies or was well revered by the American public?
Sure. And I'm not a hugely political guy. I certainly was when I started out in this field. And you kind of have to be in flood because it's, yep. You know, you interact with a federal program. But there were elements, and this is not an endorsement of this president, but there were elements of the George W. Bush, the second Bush administration that I really admired. And there were certainly parts that I did not admire. I think many people call him in some cases a war criminal. I think that's a little bit far. But I read a great article recently about his transition from his administration to the Obama administration being a model to this day of presidential transitions. And that, to me, is admirable because you can take a administration and move from one to another. That was something that I really liked. So I would say that part of it certainly is something I admire greatly.
Excellent. Excellent answer. Joe, I want to thank you again for joining us. And thank you also for your insight on the big race yesterday. Who comes away with the cup this year? Who's your favorite?
Well, the stealth didn't win. Top five finish was Kyle Busch in a new team. And I think he's got a chance, a big chance.
Follow Monday Night Talk on Twitter. Start at 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. And don't forget to add hashtag Monday Night Talk to your tweets. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Great, we're back. Hour number two, later this hour. Newbie Rateau, a local award-winning filmmaker from Newbie Productions, along with a special guest, Amari Gaston. Or Gaston, I'm not sure, I'll have to ask Mario when he gets here. But they'll be here to talk a little bit about the film I Am You. But right now, joining us is State Senator Mike Braney. He is in the House. Senator, how are you?
Good. And yourself, Kevin?
We're doing pretty good. You know, knowing that today is President's Day, I guess I would ask you, who would you say would be your, what are your favorite presidents?
Well, that's a great question. If you look at the history of our country, we've had some wonderful, great presidents, and then we've had some not-so-good presidents. But I'd say President John F. Kennedy. He was assassinated in 1963, as we all know. But he had a lot of good ideas, a lot of good initiatives. The Peace Corps, one of the things he organized. But it was a good fresh start, and things were looking positive at that point in the United States. But then obviously, he got assassinated. Lyndon Baines Johnson took over. And, we've done a lot of good work, but we still got a lot of ways to go because sometimes in this country, you take two steps forward and then you take one step back. And, it's been a tough couple of years recently with the COVID pandemic. We're still not out of the woods. Things have gotten a lot better. A lot of people have been vaccinated, but there's still people I'm hearing every day that are still getting diagnosed with COVID.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mention that President John F. Kennedy was one of your favorites. I think of PT-109.
Oh, yes.
When I think of the late president and that movie about, I guess is based on his time in the service and in the Navy and running a PT boat and how he was able to help his crew after he'd get... They were out surveying some islands, and cause a bigger boat came along and took out the PT, their boat, and they were able to find a way to get back to civilization after being stranded on an island. And they say that the president, he wasn't the president at that time, but Lieutenant John F. Kennedy was the one who helped them get to safety and back, help his crew. I'm trying to spit this out. I apologize.
Well, he was recognized
as a hero
for
saving his crew, lives, right. and did it knowing that he could lose his own life doing so. Absolutely. At least according to the stories that have been told.
Mm-hmm.
So, how are you doing? How did you celebrate this this President's Day?
Well, today, like every day, even on the holidays, we're busy. I was on the phone dealing with administrations from the Brockton Signature Healthcare Facility also keeping in constant contact with the nurses, not only nurses that work there, but the Mass nurses and nurses at the Stewart Healthcare Facility, because they're taking, with the fire that happened at the Brockton Hospital Signature Healthcare Facility on Center Street in Brockton, it has caused a major burden on several other hospitals with the big impact of patients in staffing levels and everything else. So I've been in constant contact with the workers at Stewart Health, I'm sorry, the Good Samaritan as well, and people from other area hospitals, South Shore. I want to, first of all, thank the Fire Chief, Chief Nardelli from Brockton, but also all the mutual aid fire departments in the southeast part of Massachusetts and firefighters.
So 11 communities, they say,
it was amazing,
they were part of this?
Yeah, it was an amazing job they did saving lives, and all the healthcare workers and nurses. Luckily, nobody died from this tragedy, but they had to transport patients all the way down the Cape to Hyannis, to Beth Israel in Plymouth, to the Good Samaritan in Brockton, hospitals up in Boston, and as you know, the Norwood Hospital still hasn't opened up since their issue a while back. We don't have the Garden Memorial that was on the Brockton-Stoughton line anymore. I was
born at the Garden.
I was too, I have to confess, in 1962.
In Stoughton.
Yes, but I will tell you that back when the Cardinal Cushion had a fire, different situation,
yep.
They were closed for over a year. The good news then, though, the Goddard was open, the Brockton Hospital was open, and the South Shore, so they took the brunt of the patients, and now we no longer have a Goddard Memorial Hospital. Sue Jost with the Neighborhood Health Center has been doing a great job, but that's not a full hospital,
thing.
Exactly. Right. So, in Brockton Hospital was one of the biggest hospitals in southeastern Massachusetts, if not the biggest. So there's a much more serious situation going on.
When you and I were talking last week when we were scheduling this conversation, you had apprised me to being a part of a roundtable discussion of stakeholders that came together, whether it's folks from the legislature, city officials, to public safety officials who sat down and discussed, the situation, what could be done. What were some of the things that were talked about at that round table?
Well, it was so important. All the stakeholders were together. I know Congressman Lynch had staff there, Senator Markey, Senator Warren had staff there. Our state delegation from the city of Brockton was there, our three representatives, Jerry Cassie, Michelle DeBoer, and Rita Mendez, myself. We had the interim Secretary of Health and Human Services that was there. They're going to be putting on a permanent Secretary of Health and Human Services, but she's coming from the Boston Medical Center, so she had to give a notice. You need a time span to transfer. And a lot of other stakeholders, I know the president of Brockton Hospital was there, as well as administration from Brockton and the Good Samaritan as well, people from the Neighborhood Health Center. There was a wide range, and our mayor put it all together with his staff. So it was so important to get everybody on the same page, and we were just, as we still are today, assessing what needs to be done moving forward. It's a very serious situation.
What's the main problem? Is it fire damage? Is it just necessarily not having power? Is that the key Is there not enough power to power the entire facility?
That's the biggest thing. I've been told that the whole power system is gone, and that's quite a big facility. They are bringing in electricians and engineers and everybody else to still assess the damage and what needs to be done. But they had two transformers that went. There's a third one that they may be able to refurbish. Initially, though, they were looking at getting parts from France. That's how bad things are in the world with what's going on in Ukraine and everything else. But I have heard that there's a construction job that may be on hold, so they might be able to get some transfer switches or power from generators from that facility to be delivered to Brockton. But they're still assessing all the damage. I did speak to the leadership at the Brockton Signature Healthcare. They may be able to open up, and they're talking about opening up a urgent care facility at the Liberty Street location, which is 110 Liberty Street, maybe the beginning of this week coming up. They do have another building that's on the campus of Brockton Hospital that is not attached to the building. It's a separate building. It's close to the Center Street location. That is an OBGYN. It's not being fully utilized, so they're talking about maybe refurbishing that to get that up and running within a couple weeks for urgent care. But see, urgent care is obviously different than emergency care.
Sure.
It'll help patients and so forth. But they're trying to get things moving as swiftly as possible. Thank God they were able to transport 160-plus patients to all these other hospitals. Everyone got transported safely. It happened before any operations or surgical procedures started that morning. It was early in between the graveyard shifts, as you're saying. And the nurses who worked the midnight to eight shift, they did a yeoman's work like everybody. And the Brockton location of Signature Healthcare has 1,700 employees.
Wow.
So that's a large impact. I did hear that they're going to cover them for the time being. But, you know, they're facing a financial impact, whether they have insurance or not. You know, sometimes insurance companies take forever to reimburse you. So they're looking at assessing all the damage and what needs to be done. And we're meeting with all the officials. I was on the phone with Senator Warren's office today and Congressman Lynch's office. I'm constantly on the lines with all of them, as well as Senator Markey's office and any other public officials, and that governor as well. She's been great. Her staff has been down to that meeting as well, and we're trying to get everybody on the same page to figure out what's needed. It's a serious thing. We're also talking about signage, too, because even though they have electronic signs on the highways, Route 24 and 128, if you drive around some of these towns on the South Shore, whether it be Whitman, Hanson, there's those blue signs that says directions, go to Brockton Hospital.
Yep.
And we're trying to work with Mass DOT or other towns to say, can they temporarily cover those signs so people don't get confused that don't know about the hospital fire.
Right.
But still, people might put in their GPS going to Brockton Hospital, and they don't know it's closed. So they have an ambulance, a vehicle on duty 24/7 outside of the hospital in case people show up thinking, not knowing that the hospital's been closed. And that takes another vehicle offline with the local ambulance services. So,
what are they saying as far as the earliest that the hospital can be opened fully? Are they saying that they don't have a date in mind or a time in mind because of the not being able to get these parts that they're so hard to find?
Well, they may be able, like I mentioned, they maybe get the power company, that outfit to deliver this need for that third power source. But nobody really knows how long it's going to take. Maybe they can get some of the building up and running within a couple months, but that's all tentative.
Wow.
Nothing's guaranteed. Again, they did say 110 Liberty Street's going to be open by Monday, this coming Monday. But as far as the other building that's on the site, not part of the existing Brockton Hospital building itself, that could be up and running shortly. But the rest of the building, who knows? They've got all the experts here, as I mentioned, the electricians, the engineers, all the people that know more than I do that are assessing all the damage and looking to see what it's going to cost to get it up and running, what's needed for parts, what's needed for manpower, et cetera. But they're staying right on top of things, and I'm staying in contact with them as much as possible.
I would think, and again, we're speaking with State Senator Mike Brady, and what we're discussing right now is the recent 10-alarm fire at Brockton Hospital has happened in a transformer, in an electrical part of the hospital, where they had to clear out over 160
plus patients,
plus staff. And now the discussion is what happens next? How will this go? Does it not concern you as an elected official that we have a hospital, this is important, that in order for us to power it, for us to have what's needed to be able to put it back online, is not something that is manufactured in this country any longer, that we need to depend on another part of the world in order to be able to put this hospital back online?
Yeah, it is crazy. I mean, there is some equipment that still is manufactured in the United States, and they're trying to bring more back, but
yep.
It is crazy that they initially were looking to get this power thing from France. But now I did hear that they may, as I mentioned earlier, there was another construction job that was put on hold that they may be able to get.
Right, they might be able to relocate that.
Yes, the time being. And that's, thank God, if that is able to do that. But it's a very serious situation. I remember when the other hospital, the Cardinal Cushing at the time, before it became the Good Samaritan, their power was out. They were out for over a year. But the difference back then, that was in 1994, we did have the Goddard Memorial line. We had Brockton Hospital, right, which is one of the biggest hospitals on the South Shore in Weymouth.
Right.
So you had other outlets to kind of cover the impact. This right now has put in a major impact on the staff at the Good Samaritan, you know, waiting times in the emergency rooms. You've got the Morton and Taunton that they closed the maternity several years ago in the pediatrics. They will take people that are in labor to go there for the emergency room, but that's a serious situation. In the Norwood Hospital not being open because they had an issue there a little while ago. So this whole Southeastern region, and again, I'm on the horn with these administrators just about every day to come up with ideas what we can do to get things moving. And we're there to help. I know our governor's office, we've talked to the governor. She's called me herself. That whatever they can do to help, and then, of course, our federal delegation. And we don't know what they need. As I mentioned, they may have insurance, but right now there's no income coming in. So that's a very serious situation for everybody.
Let's move from the Brockton Hospital to what's happening in the district. How has it been since the start of the legislative session? Have you, is it, you know, business as usual? How's it feel to have a new administration? You talk about having a regular conversation with Governor Healey and Lieutenant Governor Driscoll. How's it feel at the State House these days?
Well, we're getting moving forward with a new administration. I mean, I've got a great relationship with our current governor, which is great. She's been very accessible. Her staff has been very accessible. But I also had a good relationship with Governor Baker and Lieutenant Governor Polito. But with all of this going on, they're bringing new people on boards for different departments. For instance, I mentioned right now there's an interim Secretary of Health and Human Services. That person is going to be on for probably a couple more weeks. They're going to bring a permanent person in. We've got a lot of bills filed for the new upcoming session. One bill that I filed, Right to Repair, which will help the consumers, because a simple cell phone, which I'm lucky I know how to use with this technology at my age, but yeah. That being said, you got to send it back to the manufacturer sometimes, which costs a consumer an arm and a leg. Why can't a local repair shop fix it? And we filed this bill several times. I sponsored it this year to help out the consumers, to save the consumers' cost. There's several other bills we filed. We're looking to help dairy farmers out with their situation, anaerobic digestion, which is a big thing to convert some of the waste into energy, which makes sense.
Ooh.
And there's several other bills we're doing. I've got new committees. I'm still the chairman of public service, which I was on the last 2 years.
Nice.
But I'm also been appointed to the vice chairman of public safety and the vice chairman of revenue. And I'm grateful that I'm still on the Ways and Means Committee and the Veterans Committee, because I have a soft spot in my heart for the veterans, because if sure. they didn't do saving lives and fighting for our country, you and I wouldn't be here sitting to have an open conversation, open dialogue.
Don't get startled by the gentleman who is sitting down next to you. As you, I know you recognize him being a Brockton guy. He's the next guest who's here to talk about, so I guess, some big event happening up at the State House with the showing of his movie. So he's here to kind of promote
well,
that.
Well, this guy next to me is more famous than I am. Newbie, welcome. He has done so much great work, and I'm so proud of him. I remember him as a young man working at the Brockton Community Access Cable, and he's come a long way in all his work with producing movies, creating movies, and I'm so honored to be here. He's won awards. I'm sitting next to fame here. I'm kind of taken aback, and he's still much younger than I am, so I wish him the best of luck, and I look forward to seeing him when he comes to the stadium.
I think Larry has your mic on.
Hey, Mike, do you remember where we met? I'm going to do a test where we met. I think I was 16 years old. Keep Brockton Beautiful. At the, what park was it? James Edgar Park.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That was the first time you, Mike, went.
Mary Virginia Curtis, God rest her soul. She was, my mother passed away in 1983, and she got involved in my campaign when I ran for city council. She grew up in the neighborhood with Tommy Kennedy and lived up the street from Mary Kennedy. And we used to clean Edgar's Park twice a year in the spring on Keep Brockton Beautiful Day, and then later on, right before the Labor Day baseball tournaments that they used to have there. And, I enjoyed it, and it got us out in the good weather and got some exercise, and you're cleaning up a park for the kids.
See, I think you were telling me before that you actually were a big fan of his very first show, Stepping Up Big Time with Newbie Rotel, where he would actually, on a regular basis, invite in some of the biggest talkers, and he would surround himself, and they would all attack him, and he would have to find a way out of the conversation every show. And he did it most times.
See, I can't remember anybody ever attacking Newbie. He had me on one of his shows one time, and it was all positive.
Okay. Usually it would be sports related, and he would be the one who would be the he would play devil's advocate, and usually there'd be two individuals, three individuals who'd be all over him, going, telling him he was wrong, he doesn't know what he's talking about.
Name me one person who does not like Mike Brady. How can he go negative? You can't go negative.
No, but what I'm saying though is that he was a big fan of your show, stepping up big time.
Well, that's what we did.
Just giving a background on your show.
Because we stepped up big time.
You did. You did. It was. I was amazed at the number of people that you would invite in who would be hostile towards you. You're bringing them into your cell, your very first show. I think you even did bits about Shaquille O'Neal as well.
Well, Shaquille O'Neal, very similar to Shaq. He'd take a lot of attacks from everybody. But Shaq was so dominant, it didn't matter. So I was trying to emulate Shaquille O'Neal.
All right. Well, he again, a little bit of a tease as Newby will be joining us. Let's continue with the Senator Mike Brady with us just for a couple more minutes here. Of your committee assignments, is there one that you're looking more forward to, or do you feel that there are some significant issues that those committees are going to tackle this session?
Well, I'm fortunate that I'm still on some of the committees. I was on Ways and Means, and I've got a great relationship with my chairman, Mike Rodericks, who's been great to me as the chairman of Ways and Means when I was able to get funding in the budget and so forth for different things. I know the governor's doing her budget as we speak, so, excuse me, it'll come to the House of Representatives, then it goes to the Senate. We're looking forward. Revenue is doing very well in the Commonwealth. People, as you know, this past year got money back as a check and a little reimbursement.
Yep.
We're trying to get more money continuing for our cities and towns that we represent. Our roads are in deplorable condition. Sorry, I'm getting a little hoarse here. But so we are getting more money for transportation, which is so important. Our infrastructure, which is huge. And money's for the schools. I mean, I was grateful that we passed the Student Opportunity Act.
Yep.
Things got put on hold a little bit because of COVID, but we are increasing funding for our public education system all the way K through 12 plus higher education. I was a big supporter of getting funding for the Massachusetts Community College and Bridgewater State University in all our state universities.
So I actually had someone who is a friend who had asked me. He likes the idea that the state is doing more when it comes to transportation infrastructure. But the individual, his name is Bob, he says, how come it is, okay, he's happy that you see roads are being paved, new sidewalks, but it takes forever for them to finally put down the line to the road. And he wants to know if there's something that can be done when it comes to Chapter 90 money to make sure that. And I says, I'll ask the senator. I doubt he'll have an answer for that. But he wanted me to ask that of either yourself or any of the future legislators that we have on the radio.
Well, I would first ask any particular roads, because if it's in my district, I know constituents call me all the time.
Okay.
I'm right on the horn with the head of these departments, whether it be Chapter 90 money comes from the state.
Yep.
Community development block grants, that's federal money, so that's more the inner core of the communities. And then when I was a council in Brockton, we had local money that council.
Ward 2 councilor?
Yes, from the old Ward 2 era, Edgar's Park era and so forth. But we were able to get local money, so we gave a list in working with our mayor at the time, which was Jack Unitz and Jim Hamilton afterwards. And there's other sources of funding, too. So, but the biggest thing is if they can tell us what street or roadway they're talking about, then we can find out where the funding is. And if there's any delays, like some things do take forever, you've also got utilities. And if there's gas lines under the road or utilities, you got to make sure they're prepared and safe. And there's rules like once a road is paved, you may not be able to dig it up again for a time span because they don't want to re-dig up a road that's just been paved. And there's another thing that comes up is, you know, in life you can never please everybody. Sometimes when they freshly pave a new road, then you got complaints about speeders. And some of the side streets in some of the communities I represent, they have a bumpy road and the people are complaining their front ends are offline, et cetera. Then they get the road paved and it's wonderful. Then you got the people speeding. So we work with our public safety personnel to make sure.
Speed bump on the road?
But you can't put speed bumps in certain areas. If it's a public road, it's more difficult. It's private roads, that's different. But, you know, that's why we work with our local police departments and traffic people to keep an eye on that. But things are doing well financially for the Commonwealth. I do expect to have more revenue. We may even do a supplemental budget besides a regular budget we do at the end of July there. But
for folks who don't understand, a supplemental budget usually means is when the revenues are coming in
yes.
above and beyond predicted, then those monies are put into a supplemental budget that can be put towards the needs of the Commonwealth, correct?
Yeah, and we all of us legislators in the House and the Senate might convey our wishes to the leadership and see what we can do for that supplemental budget. Like I got money for different community groups. In every community I represent is different. You got the city of Brockton that has their needs. You've got towns that have their needs. You know, like for instance in Halifax, they got an old building that is their senior center. They need a total new building. I got funding for that at one point. I got money for Whitman's Veterans Memorial, and I got money for Brockton for other issues. But I have two new communities I represent when I was here last time, too. The town of Avon and then the south end of Randolph.
There you go.
And, you know, there's a school being built in Randolph. They just did a ribbon cutting of a treatment plant that they did, which encompasses Randolph. I think it's Braintree and Holbrook, if I'm not mistaken. So that had been worked on for many, many years, and I'm grateful to all the work we're doing with our local officials as well, because nobody does this job alone.
Folks want to find out more about you. They want to reach out to your office, talk to any of your folks in your office. How can they do that?
They can call my office at 617-722-1200, 617-722-1200. They can also email my office at michael.brady@massmasenate.gov, not mass, but masenate.gov. And they know, most of the people know how to get a hold of me. I'm always around, and I'm out meeting with residents all the time. I'm meeting with seniors all the time. I know we were fortunate this winter has been kind of mild, other than that cold spell we had when it was 10 below. Even my furnace went that weekend, unfortunately, but I got it up and running. It was a water feeder that we got straightened out. But there was a lot of houses of friends of mine that their pipes froze, their ceilings collapsed. I mean, it was a tough weekend, and we are expecting a little bit of mezza weather on Thursday, I'm hearing. Hopefully it's not too much snow, and hopefully we turn the corner. But as you know, we've had snow in May at one point, so part of living in New England. But please, if anybody needs to reach me, plus one thing we're doing, which is good, a lot of people that live in the outskirts of the Commonwealth can't make it into Boston or Salem for hearings. So we are still planning on doing virtual hearings okay. so people don't have to waste 10 hours driving into Boston. They can get on a virtual line, because sometimes people only have 5 or 10 minutes to speak on those hearings. So we're looking to keep the virtual subcommittee hearings up and running.
There he is, State Senator Mike Brady, our guest. Senator, thank you again. We'll have you back on soon.
Thank you very much, and I'm going to pass it over to our good friend Newbie here, who's up next.
And Amari, too.
And thank you again for having me. And please keep in contact with me, and I'll try to keep the residents up to speed on what's going on with the Brockton Hospital situation.
We're going to step aside when we come back. The final segment of Monday Night Talk right here on 95.9 WATD.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Dad, you know I'm willing to drive.
Honey, we're all set here.
But your eyes, you even say so yourself, don't like driving at night.
Well, that's why I'm following the plow.
But that's a sander, Dad. You know what they say.
It pays to stay way back.
It pays to stay way back.
Oh!
Too late.
I'm Peter Brown of Tiny & Sons Auto Glass in Pembroke. It pays to stay way back. However, if your windshield is broken, just call 1-888-64-TINIES, and thank you.
Hey, it's John Shea here from Almost Famous Radio, introducing you to independent bands and musicians from across New England each Tuesday night, brought to you by Tiny and Sons Glass. Coming up tomorrow, tons of new music and upcoming show dates to pass along, and I'll be joined on the Almost Famous Tiny stage by singer-songwriter Becca Hanna. That's tomorrow, 8 till 10, right here at 95.9 WATD, and always streaming at 95.9WATD.com.
Monday Night Talk continues all week long. Go to 95.9WATD.com/Monday Night Talk and keep in touch on Facebook and Twitter. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
All right, as we teased just a few seconds ago, Newbie Rateau returns to the show, local filmmaker, award-winning filmmaker. So the, I think, proud owner of Newbie Productions. How are you?
Living the dream, Kevin. Emmy award-winning filmmaker, but that's okay. We'll give you a pass for today.
Yeah, but you've won so many awards.
Yes.
Well, you just say the Emmy, and you disregard all the other film festivals that you've won.
No, I prefer Emmy award.
You know, I had this argument. I went to the South Shore Plaza.
Okay.
And I had to go into the Apple Store, and there were these three employees there, and they wanted me to get into the fight about whether with bowling bumpers or without bumpers. I go, that's like asking a woman, how do I look in this dress, or your significant other, how do I look? You got to be careful with these things.
Well, I mean, I think that's an easy question. Without bumpers for bowling.
Well, see, hold on now.
It's the training reels of bowling.
Well, now I said, if you want the advanced level bowling, you without bumpers. If you're just kind of playing around, you're having a couple of adult beverages, go with the bumpers.
I disagree.
You put bumpers on the little kids. When it's cute, when it's cool. And cute.
Listen. I'm just in there to get a power supply for my MacBook. I don't need all this nonsense about bumpers.
The same people who say bumpers for bowling are the same people who put pineapples on pizza.
Exactly.
I second
that. I'm one of those clowns who puts pineapples on pizza. Well, Matt Nelson.
That explains
Matt Nelson. Matt Nelson. Matt Nelson, who one day I said we had the all-out discussion about it.
Okay. And are you the same person that says coupon instead of coupon? Because those are all the same type of people.
Say you say what?
You say coupon instead of coupon. Are you those?
I say coupons.
Yeah.
I say coupon.
Coupons.
Yeah. I've never heard of coupons.
That's what it's coupon or coupon.
Okay. Yeah. So is it Gaston or Gaston? Because we forgot to introduce Amari.
You tell me.
BSU student.
I mean.
Production guy. Right? Production guy for Newbie Productions.
Yeah. Yep.
Also a panelist for IMU, right?
Yeah, well, I would say the MC, the host.
Master of Ceremonies.
Really?
Yes, sir.
Wow. You mean the Gabmeister himself didn't get up there and yak it up?
I've taken a step back.
He's a big behind-the-scenes guy now.
Yeah. Oh, is he?
I've taken a step back now.
Okay.
I kind of stay behind the camera. I'm not the stepping up big-time newbie back in high school and college. I've taken a step back. I'm more behind the scenes. I enjoy it that way.
Humble.
Yes.
Humble.
Yes.
Okay. Let's. So today being President's Day.
Hey, America.
America. Right? President of choice. Is there a president you feel that is best represented the American public that you're proud to say is your president? Or again, and this is, don't forget, we've had how many presidents now? We've had 46 of them.
Right.
You could choose. I mean, you have some that have had a high level of coverage, media coverage, or have had to deal with spotlight and it being something that is broadcast, whether it's on radio and TV, right? And you have before that where we read in books and what we believe, we have to believe what we're told in those history books.
I'd say four.
Name your four. Like Randy Jackson, name that tune.
Well,
name your four.
I'm going to put Abraham Lincoln.
Wow.
Oh, okay.
I mean, that's huge. And also
say happy birthday to him while you're right.
Okay, Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah.
FDR. I'm talking about times in history.
Yeah.
Abraham Lincoln, Civil War and, the things he did for, for this country in terms of that time.
Yep.
FDR.
You already said him, yep.
JFK.
Okay. JFK's gotten three votes today.
I think JFK was so important because he was huge in terms of being the first media savvy president.
Sure.
And Barack Obama.
Okay.
I mean, listen, I got to put Obama in there. It is Black History Month.
Okay.
Got to do that.
Okay. Amari.
I'm not going to lie to you. I don't pay attention to politics that much or presidents or what they've done. I feel like I'm not that strong in this.
Obama's got to be in there, though.
In this.
For the movement.
Got to be anything.
I mean, I feel like Obama, yeah, for sure. I mean, he was the first one, so that was cool enough to have that representative there. So, I mean, I say my four is just Barack, 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 Barack.
Okay. Okay.
Just because I'm not that into it. Like, I don't know how this sounds, but I just pay attention to other things in my life instead of our presidency.
It's all good. It's all good.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you.
Our Gen Zs, right?
Come on.
I'm going to ask you a heritage question.
What's up?
Besides today being President's Day, this month is Black History Month. Talk to me about the importance of Black History, a Black History Month. Amari, the mic is yours.
I don't know. I feel like as just as an African American, I really feel like it's huge to represent and show the country or even the world, because the, like what we're capable of, the things that we've done with our history and our past, how far we've come, just to show everybody, not just one specific person, group, culture, it's just show everyone that, hey, like we helped build this country, like we're just as important as everybody else. So I think making sure that we're representing ourselves in a way where we're trying to show everyone like, hey, we're here too. And it means everything to me, honestly. Like, I love it. Like, it's awesome to, like, know that we have a month dedicated to ourselves, because we haven't got, I think we get overlooked a lot on things with when it comes to sports, jobs, life. So to be able to really have a month to emphasize that and to, like, remind people, like, hey, like, not to be reminding them in an annoying way, like, hey, we're here, but more like...
part of pride.
Yeah, it's all being about proud. Pride. Like, proud. It's more about being proudful instead of just, like... hey, we're here to more like, we're not trying to make it seem like it's pity. It's more like, yeah, we're here to like, we're coming in correct. This is our past. This is our history. And we're just, everything's different on the Black side. So to be able to bring light to it and show everybody else and to be able to make people realize just how important our heritage is, our culture and everything along the lines of that, I think it's huge. And even for myself, like, I'm not going to sit here and act like I know everything about the Black heritage and Black culture, but I think this month is a great reminder to everyone, including myself, just how far Black people has come as culture, heritage, and all that stuff. So it's huge.
So if you were to look to, okay, so we could talk history, talk about some of the big names, but how about locally? Are there individuals locally that are years from now going to be, are we going to be recognizing Anubi Ratou for his work in certain areas, critical areas of life, quality of life, that need the story to be told?
I think in areas that where there are minorities, such as like Lawrence, Lowell, Lynn, Brockton, am I missing any? Any like minority cities? I think mainly just Everett. It doesn't matter. Yeah, Everett, like Malden. I think places like that. I feel like because he's been there himself and he's been able to make an impact. I think like for instance, like at my high school, he definitely deserves to be recognized there. And Brockton, he's from Brockton. He never fails to bring up Brockton and other minority cities just to show there's people from where you're from and there's people like Anubi Ratou in the world, and you just need to. Don't take him for granted, you know? He's there to be a network for anyone and anyone that's willing to put themselves out there. He's the stepping stone that will get you to a higher place. So I think it's very important to acknowledge and recognize guys like Anubi Ratou, because if it wasn't for him, like including myself, I wouldn't be here sitting in this chair here having this conversation, or Anubi Productions wouldn't be a thing and we wouldn't be able to get a documentary. He wouldn't even have won his Emmy. So I think guys like him are showing minorities that it's possible. As you just gotta take the step to do it. You have to take the steps that are just as important as setting up a plan. It's one thing to plan it, but it's a whole other to keep doing it even after losing. And I think that's huge.
Man, the young man can talk, can he, Anubi?
You
can talk.
Oh, he can talk. I mean,
does he not yet have his own podcast? Anubi Productions?
He should have his own podcast.
Yeah.
Listen, I think Amari is kind of being, you know, we talked about me and things like that. I appreciate everything he's saying. But the fact of the matter is, Amari, myself, and any other people, we're standing on the shoulders of giants. We really are standing on the shoulders of giants.
Who are those giants? Who are those giants for you?
Well, I mean, look at, you know, in terms of, you know, I've been blessed in the media industry. I think it's kind of a prime in terms of, you know, the amount of minorities.
Stephen A. Smith?
Yeah, I'm talking about Stuart Scott. I'm talking about Stephen A. Smith locally.
Who is the other side of the pillow?
I'm talking about Michael Holly. I'm talking about Willie May, right?
Yeah.
You know, I'm talking about local writers and reporters who made our job
so much easier.
Yeah. You know, so, you know, I've been blessed enough to win an Emmy and do a lot of things and able to teach amazing students like Amari, and he's going to do amazing things bigger and better than I will ever do just because he's had that head start. But in terms of paying homage, that's what it's really all about. And we're talking about Black History Month. It's standing on the shoulders of giants. Now, listen, I'm a media person, and I'm not going to sit here and talk about every other aspect, but I'm talking about in terms of media. Wow. I mean, we got some people here who really, really put in the work, where one of my person here was Stuart Scott. Stuart Scott was the first person on TV that felt like sounded kind of how I sounded talking to my friends. And then Steve A. Smith did a great job carrying that torch, Scoop Jackson, so on and so forth. So, you know, when I'm doing my job in terms of media, it's so much easier because they already paved that path. They went through the struggle. So listen, we're going to have some struggles and some bumps. That's life. But in terms of, you know, going over those huge mountains, I don't have to do that anymore.
But don't forget, you're also setting a precedence for young individuals like Amari who are watching. They watch what you do and how you do it, how you carry yourself, the shoes you may wear, to an award show. They're watching those things and saying, I know my shoes are going to be way better when I'm getting up there to get my award. No, but honestly, let me ask you this question. Is there enough being done to recognize the little-known Black leaders, the Black leaders that, you know what, they're those that we know, that the common names. Are there the ones that, you know what, that have been a benchmark for certain things here in our country that maybe do not get mentioned enough?
Absolutely. In terms of people who get mentioned, absolutely. Now, you have a couple options here, Kevin. Okay?
I'm going to give you multiple choice. You go.
All right. You can sit here and talk about the issue mm-hmm. and complain about the issue.
Or do something about it.
Or you could be the change. Mm-hmm. Let me give you an example. Okay? When we talk about, and I'm just going to use myself as an example, you know, in terms of creating content for TV, because the fact of the matter is when we watch media, particularly because the minority community is not always a positive light. Can you complain about it, or can you create your own content? Yep. And now, what I love is look at the explosion of podcasts that are going on in terms of former athletes. They're no longer complaining about he or she's writing a bad article about me. They might be racially biased or so on and so forth. They're not creating their own content. I think Draymond called it the new media. So, listen, are there ways that we can improve and get more publicity in terms of media? Yes. But the mountains and the barriers have been broken down. There are still some speed bumps, but the big mountains have been climbed. Okay? So we as a minority community need to understand that, listen, we have the license to create content and to different things. So now we have to take that and run with it. We have the ability to change it today, right now, with our cell phone, with some podcast equipment. So it sounds like we needed some expensive equipment 10, 15, 20, 30 years ago. We could change it right now as of this minute. So I'm not going to cry about necessarily not getting the publicity, you know, that maybe certain people get in the minority industry. I'm not going to do it because the solution is literally in your hands and you have the information to find the solution.
Can I just add something? That I think that's huge but what you're saying with like, it's not like we never had it. You're right. It's just we needed guys like you guys, you, Stephen A. Smith, all these people that are showing people that it's possible and that like you're willing to do it. So I think it's important for people like me to have guys like Nubi Rateau that like sets the precedent and shows you that it's possible to do it. Like just seeing him do stuff and like things like winning an Emmy when we beat Boston 25 News, Fox News, like stuff I used to watch as a kid, my high school teachers beating them. You know, like, and it, like, as being one of the only minorities in the room, that's huge. I can't even express how huge it is to have that feeling of pride, just like, it's possible. It is possible. And then it starts now by just being knowledgeable and having guys like Nubi Rateau. When I was in high school, he taught me all the things I know to who I am.
So, let me ask you. I'm going to use an analogy. Okay? Yeah. So you're sitting here. Let's say you guys are fishermen, and you're watching Nubi landing these big tunas off the back of the boat. He takes the time to show you this is how you bait the hook. This is how much tension you got on it. And then one day, you land the big fish.
I catch my own.
What's that like to have mentors? To have mentors like a Nubi working with you and working with some of your peers and helping to create the next generation of storytellers?
I think it's huge because it's one the thing I love about it is he's going to support me no matter what I do, whether it's podcasts, yep. being honestly any type of job within media. He's going to support in any ways that he's knowledgeable. So he's going to help me or my best friend who's more into cameras. I'm more into talking. Yep. So it's just he's going to support us. So it's just the fact that we have so many options of ways to get help from him. Yeah, we have a guide of someone who knows it all and that can help us. So it kind of encourages you in a way to want to do it because it's like, we have all the equipment, like he said. We have everything, and I was just, what's stopping you? Right. And we've been blessed to have a guy like Newbie come through and really take it by storm and lead it by force and show us that it's possible. You just have to be willing to do it, and then to have the help and support is something that I can't express enough because without that, it kind of seems impossible. So it's definitely very helpful.
If you're just tuning in, you are tuned into Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. Voice you just heard, Amara Gaston. He is a Bridgewater State University student, also works with the Newbie Productions, and of course, he's under the guidance of Newbertson Rattel. Used to hate when he used to say
that. You're the
only
one that calls him by my government name. No one knows that. Stop calling him by my government name.
Wait. You mean moms don't call you Newbertson when you're, like, you're in trouble or something?
My mom, pretty much for the most part, calls me Newbie Rattel.
Okay. So. But you know what? I still say it because I remember one day, long time ago, at Brockton Community X, I called you Newbertson, and you're like, "Oh, dude, you sound like my mother." I'm like, so I
she'll
do it.
For, say when I'm mad. When she's mad at me, she'll call me Newbertson.
I'll do it occasionally just to have fun and just to.
When she's mad, but how could you be mad at this face?
You can't be.
Come on, so
you can't, and aren't you soon going to be Uncle Newbie?
Yes, I'm going.
Grandpa Newbie.
Yes. Yep. Very I'm going to. Nice. Niece, any minute day now.
Congratulate your sister for me.
Yes, I will.
Staying back on topic, Newbie Rattel, award-winning, Emmy-winning filmmaker here chatting, and we should probably get to. We don't want to bury the lead here because the primary reason to have you here is just to kind of talk a little bit. I think it's fantastic that you're going to be showing. I Am You, your latest document, your latest film at the State House, the Massachusetts State House. Why is this so important? Why is this showing so important to be having it at this location?
It's the most important screening we've had. I think of all screens we've had ever, frankly. Because I think it's important to have so many, you know, we have so many fantastic lawmakers. Like we just had Mike Brady, Senator Mike Brady on. Yep. About half an hour ago, so I want when you're doing legislation and you're putting laws together, I think it's important to put a face with that legislation, put a face with those stories, and I think it's very important, you know, like anything, and you know, if you're an administrator for a school, sometimes you gotta be in the classroom to see the students that you're making the rules for. So we want to be able to share some stories of people who are going through immigration. Struggles, the dreamers and second generation immigrant students about what they're going through, and then maybe it can impact some different bills. I know there's a bill proposed about tuition and providing tuition for students who are undocumented. I know they just recently passed a bill last year to have undocumented students, citizens with licenses.
So allow them to get licenses. Yeah, so, and let's not forget there was a ballot question.
Yes.
That was defeated.
So just putting a face with proposed legislation, I think it's important for lawmakers to see it. So we're really excited, and Amari's going to be working with Senator Creighton relatively soon. So it's a mass made in heaven. So I want to give a shout out to the Broughton Cultural Council and the Broughton delegation for continuing to support the arts and the Cultural Council and Senator Brendan Creighton, who sponsored the event as well.
Any particular, have you heard any word as to any special dignitaries who may attend this? Have you, I mean, do you know, you know, who is purchasing the tickets, or is it a matter of like sight unseen and they're selling? Or have you sold out?
Yeah, well, we have about a little less than 100 people have registered, so we have a good number. I think it's about 95 or something like that registered.
What's the total tickets that you'd be willing, that you're gonna have for seating purposes?
I'd say comfortably let's do like 120. Oh, comfortably, so
you're right there.
Yeah, so we're right there. I know State Representative Rita Mendez, and I just talked to Senator Brady just before he left here. You know, he said, you know, just send the information. I know you know, different people from different offices, such as Senator Creighton. Who else I'm missing? Between the Brockton and Lynn delegation, there'll be a good representation. I know Senator Liz Miranda is going to be there. She registered as well. I believe she's in Boston. So I think we'll get a good number of state senators and either someone from the office or themselves there, so which is really exciting.
What if you had some big names that show up? What if you had...
Secretary of Education is going to be there too, Patrick Tutwiler.
Hey, how's that feel? How does that feel?
He better be there. He was my old boss in Lynn, the old superintendent.
Superintendent of the city.
He's not going to be there. I'm going to be happy.
Well, what if Governor Healey shows up? What if Lieutenant Governor Driscoll? I mean, are you hoping that you'll see some important names? Every legislator there is important, but you have some that are in leadership roles.
Game changers.
Would you not want to see some of the ones who are the ones with the status amongst the legislature being there, whether it's constitutional offices or...
Let me cut you off and answer your question.
Yeah, please.
Yes. If you're listening right now and you work in the state house, I want you there.
But is that something like marketing wise, like you reach out and say, is there any way the governor can come to this? Do you just let it hope that they see this and think that it's an important enough issue to show up and to support a young filmmaker like yourself?
Kevin, you know me. You think I sit back and wait?
No.
Okay.
No, but the millions of people who are tuned in don't necessarily all know you.
You're right.
I'm trying to give you that platform so you can know these millions of people.
You're right again, Kevin.
I know.
Yes. So, yeah, I have reached out to them, and I'd be honored. We did reach out to U.S. Attorney Rachel Rollins. She's unable to make it. She has a prior commitment. Okay. But we did reach out to the governor's office. We did reach out to the press over at the State House.
State House News?
Yep, to reach out to the other representatives. So I think we have a healthy number of representatives there and senators there.
And anybody can purchase these tickets still?
It's free and everyone can purchase, and you get free food. Come on.
Oh,
what?
Free food, come on.
Free, it's my favorite four-letter word. Well, there are other four-letter words that I like too, but we'll go free for now. We just got a couple of moments left here.
And Amari's going to be moderating the panel discussion.
Wow. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Anything you want to say in closing? Amari Gaston, our guest here, along with New River Tow, you looking forward to this?
I'm definitely excited because to be able to give light on a topic that doesn't normally get talked about. So I think, like you guys were just talking about, I think anyone that can make it, please show up, please support, because the story that we're telling in this documentary, it's not fake at all. It is not fake in the slightest. These are people's real lives, their day-to-days, like stuff that you see in this film is stuff that they're actually going through. Like, that's their life that they have to go through and live.
And you share that story.
Yeah, so to be able to share this story, and I can't thank Newbie enough for giving me this opportunity to be here with him. I just want to shout out to you. I want to shout out my mom. Shout out to Nate, Jez, Jesus, Jazz, all them people. Thank you for supporting, because I told people to join this radio station. So just to even have support on this level, feel me? So thank you guys.
I do want to give a shout out to Amari. He actually was instrumental in probably bringing, I don't want to say the most important, but probably the most notable name to the document, which is attorney, Massachusetts U.S. Attorney Rachel Rollins. He was able to secure that interview, which was huge. Which was that was a game changer.
It was
for
by
us.
Accident. It wasn't even supposed to happen. But
there are no accidents, my friend.
Listen, you make your luck sometimes.
Yeah. You make your luck. Exactly. Newbie, I want to thank you for coming in. Mari, I want to thank you for having me, sharing and being vocal in this conversation. Any teases yet on your next project, or is that still under wraps?
So here's the tease. The tease is it will have something to do with the youth. It was something to do with the youth, and we're it's two topics that are really connected together. But I can tell you that we will make an announcement probably in the summer of our next project. We're just trying to figure out what we're going to do in terms of funding and talking to different people. But it will have something to do with the youth of America, and we're really, really excited about it. It's going to be our best project yet.
There he is, Newbie Rateau, our guest, along with Amari Gaston. And hey, if you haven't got tickets, it's this Wednesday at the State House. Tickets are free.
Tune in.
Free food.
Tune in.
Check it out. Hey, If you missed any of the show, we are working on updating our podcast. But until next week at 6:15 p.m., you've been tuned into Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. Have a good night.
Kevin, you're my hero.